You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right.
News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. Phil Williams here hosting Right Side Radio. Like the man said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Hey, folks, listen, I am glad to have a guest coming on right now who is far more of an expert on issues related to COVID and the treatment thereof than anybody, you know, in the studio with me right now, including myself, or for that matter, anybody at AL.com or some of the others that preach death and destruction. I think it's important that we hear from experts. And so I've asked Dr. Jordan Vaughn for the opportunity to speak to him on live on the air. And Dr. Vaughn has agreed. And I will tell you, he's a graduate of the University of Alabama School of Medicine. He specializes in family and internal medicine. He's the owner and operator of a chain of medical clinics in the Birmingham area called MedHelp, and he has over 150,000 patients treated in the last year, over 200 employees. This is not a small organization. Dr. Jordan Vaughn, thanks for coming on Right Side Radio. We're glad to have you with us today.
Thanks for having me, Phil.
Absolutely. Well, listen, I mean, COVID's real. Let's go ahead and acknowledge there's no COVID denying going on this show, and certainly you and I in our previous conversations, you're not any kind of a COVID denier, and you've already made clear to me, too, that you're not even you would not be an anti-vaxxer. You believe there's an all of the above approach to treatment. Am I correct?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on the situation, but I think the key to any medical diagnosis, as well as just in disease in general, is hitting it from all directions.
Well, and I agree with that, and yet there has been this incredible, you know, backlash in the media, especially the media, and even to some degree out of the Biden administration. It seems like if you would dare to speak of things like ivermectin or Regeneron or some of the other things that are considered to be reasonable treatments that have been around for quite some time, they're FDA approved, that you're a nutcase in some way. And then at the same time, we also have the opportunity for monoclonal antibody treatments. And I tell you what, let's talk about monoclonal antibodies just for a second, Doc. Describe briefly what that is, and then I want to get into this new issue we have with that. Did we lose him? We just lost him. Well, Copper, see if you can get him back real quick. So here's the bottom line, folks. While we're waiting to see if we can get him back on the line, is that him, Copper? Good deal. All right, we're working to get him back on the air, but we just had a gaffe there with the phones. But folks, what he was telling me earlier was the fact that monoclonal antibodies treatments are available. Doc, are you back on the line with us?
I am. Sorry about that.
That's okay. Hey, listen, so monoclonal antibodies, give us a quick version, if you would, about what that is, and then let's talk about the issues with getting supplies for it.
Okay, so monoclonal antibodies are basically getting a synthetic version of your original, what your body would have made. And so in that case, it's an important treatment option. In the past, a lot of the ways we've thought about it are, you know, when we talk about convalescent plasma, but plasma from another human has some, you know, downsides, whether it's allergic reactions or the uniqueness of each human that make it where that is not as compatible with another person and not as easy to infuse. Monoclonal antibodies are a synthetic version of that without having all the risk of allergic reactions and type crossover and all those kind of things. So basically, it's a, I would say, a concentrated and safer way to treat people in a similar vein that we've treated people with convalescent plasma.
Well, now some are seeking this as a prophylactic, trying to get it when they don't have COVID. But you've also suggested to me, I believe, that it's truthfully it's best for treatment within the early stages of being diagnosed with COVID. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. The key is to decrease the viral replication. And that is basically what the monoclonal antibodies do. Now, I will say that it does offer some protection prophylactically, but especially with the shortage currently, that's really not what we've been doing at all, except for some very unique cases where it might be somebody that needs to travel because of cancer therapies or something like that.
Okay. Well, so you just hit on a piece, though, that I want to touch on. So the Alabama Medical Association believes in apparently the use of monoclonal antibodies and even, truthfully, the federal government, except that the federal government has apparently come up with a new formula for allocations. And whereas President Biden, and I played the clip a little while ago, said he was going to increase supply by up to 50%, has actually reduced it by as much as 30% to the state of Alabama. And you got a letter from Health and Human Services, I believe, about that.
Yeah, exactly. The other thing that Health and Human Services has done is gotten between us and the manufacturer. That has been playing out over the last probably 10 days. And initially, I did all the paperwork to be able to get the monoclonal antibodies, gave over 100 treatments within 4 days here at my clinics. And then the next thing I knew, HHS had intervened where any order I had to be allocated correctly, and then I had to report. And of course, when you have to report, you have to jump through all the portal hoops and all those kind of things. And then actually this past Monday, they decided to switch it on us again now, where it's back to the Department of Health at the state level, but they are going to allocate it to each state based on their calculation of what we would call equitable distribution. And as a physician, I'm not really... when I'm talking about treating disease, equitable treatment is not really something I've ever done. It's, for me, it's somebody who needs a therapy.
Well, I'll be honest with you, too. As a conservative talk show host, when I hear the word equitable, my red flags start flying, because that sounds an awful lot like somebody has their notions of fair play and social justice that they want to apply to the formulaic distribution.
Yeah, exactly. And on top of the equitable distribution, it's been kind of I literally wake up each morning and say, what hoop do I need to jump through today to get treatment for my patients? And that's been very frustrating. And there's no shortage of supply, because we'll get Regeneron on the phone with their government affairs person, and they're saying we have all the supply that we need. So it's not a shortage. It's just that they're literally wanting to even hold back distribution of these therapies, so other states in the future who might or might not need them will have them.
Well, and you know, we could speculate all day as to what their methodology is, whether it be politically driven or whether it be something that they're trying to keep the vaccinations as the primary function of anything related to COVID and COVID wellness. But listen,
well,
Bill, I will say
one of the most important things to point out is half the people that I have given that treatment to are vaccinated. And in all honesty, one of the fears I have about people thinking that they're completely safe from hospitalization or death because they're vaccinated is really not true. You still need to treat this if you get a positive test, like a serious disease, and you need to seek out care early, and you need to make sure that you're getting therapeutics early, regardless of your vaccination status.
Well, and that's fair, and I appreciate you saying that. But you did mention something a minute ago. You mentioned Regeneron, and so Regeneron and ivermectin are two applications that have gotten a lot of negative press. And I'd like to hear you just expand on those two. One of which, ivermectin, has even been called horse dewormer, and has become a source of a lot of mocking within mainstream media.
Yeah. So ivermectin, really the usage of that really developed in a lot of other countries. The nice thing about the current publication of medical journals is, I get up-to-date, even preprint articles from all over the world. And again, this is a global pandemic, so there's a lot of other countries that are trying things that we haven't been allowed to try because we have one central person that really approves each treatment, whether we're allowed to try it or not. And a lot of other countries, they've been a lot more distributive and said, hey, let's try what's on the pharmaceutical shelf here and see if it has any action or any basis for treating this disease. And that's really where ivermectin actually came from, is a lot from India, Brazil. A lot of physicians down there, there's not a huge, pharma-industrial complex that is, waiting to have some brand new therapy that costs a lot of money. Instead, they're like, all we've got is what's on the shelf. Let's try it. Let's try things that are safe. Let's try things that in the lab have some activity against SARS-CoV-2. And the reality is when they actually pulled those out of the lab and tried them in the clinic, that they saw some impressive results. Of course, those results are not necessarily given much play here in the U.S., but a lot of other countries, that's what they've been doing. And in all honesty, I think a lot of those countries have been doing, if not better than us, at least equivalent to us, and we're supposedly a much more advanced medical system.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, let me ask you this, though, too. Ivermectin, so it does have some application to veterinary medicine, but at the same time, there is a human application that is available. But I'm also hearing, too, that the CDC has been advising pharmacists not to dispense it. Are you hearing that? Are people having trouble getting prescriptions filled for ivermectin if they want it?
Yeah, they are, and a lot of it has to do with just when the CDC or when a state organization comes down and says this therapy is not for that, you know, a lot of times you have your payers kick back and your payers say, we're not going to pay for this. And so in that case, a lot of times the pharmacies say, well, if that's the case, then we really don't really want to even have it on hand and better have a darn good indication for giving it. And that's fine for a lot of things. But when we're talking about a rapidly developing pandemic whose treatments are not necessarily known very well yet, a lot of times trying known safe medications that have some indication that they, or not indication, but just that they have some evidence that they help in a therapeutic realm is what medical art is.
Well, and Doc, listen, we're going to head to a short break right now, if you don't mind. Can you hang on through the break? Because I want to keep this conversation going for a few more minutes. Is that okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. That's Dr. Jordan Vaughn from MedHelp Clinics in Birmingham, talking to us about an all-of-the-above treatment and the fact that too often bureaucracy and red tape is getting in the way of people being allowed to work with their own medical provider for that full range of treatment options. All right, folks, that's important news, and I hope you're taking notes on this, because literally if you're facing COVID, which is real, even if you've been vaccinated, there are still other treatments available that too often are being downgraded by the media, and the media is not your doctor. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. We will be right back. AM 92.5 FM WVNN. Phil Williams hosting Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Hey, listen, I want to go back to the phone right away with Dr. Jordan Vaughn, the owner-operator of a chain of medical clinics specializing in family and internal medicine down in Birmingham, the MedHelp Clinics. He's treated over 150,000 patients his clinics have in the last year, over 200 employees. This is no small clinic. This is a major operation. And Dr. Vaughn, thanks for staying on to the break. I'd like to jump into a separate topic that we didn't even get into in the last segment, and that's the question of natural antibodies. Because people everywhere are wondering, why is it being downplayed? Why, if you've had COVID and you develop natural antibodies, doesn't that mean something? And I'd love to hear your perspective on that.
Yeah, it absolutely means a ton. And in all honesty, I mean, this isn't anything new. It's always been in the immunological as well as virological literature to say that an actual infection is probably the gold standard of protection for the future. And it was kind of crazy in February 2020, March 2020, where that was not even being appreciated by the higher-ups in our medical system. And I couldn't really understand why, because it wasn't like the text or there was some overwhelming new discovery that they had found that showed that this wasn't still true. And especially in the last 3 months, the data, especially from Israel, is overwhelming that prior immunity is the gold standard of protection.
So in your opinion, then, if you're okay with giving a medical opinion on this, if someone has had COVID and now their employer is mandating a shot, but they have natural antibodies, do they still need, in your opinion, to get vaccinated? I mean, what's the status of that, in your opinion?
So based on the most recent data from Israel, the prior infected have about 27 times, meaning less likely to be have a symptomatic infection with Delta compared to the vaccinated. So in many ways, I'm not really sure that there's good evidence yet that getting a vaccine is beneficial after prior infection. There are some studies that show you might get a little bit of a small boost, but the statistics and the numbers are really statistically insignificant. And to go along with that, there is a lot of observational data that shows that people who were prior infected have a much more difficult time tolerating the vaccine, as the adverse events are about 6 to 7 times higher in the prior infected. And interestingly enough, I will remind you that when they did these studies, they did not include the prior infected. They excluded them from the trial. So therefore, all the data that Pfizer, Moderna put out on efficacy is not really applicable to a person with prior infection and has evidence of seroconversion. With seroconversion would mean my antibodies are present in my blood. Now, I will say, because the tests themselves, especially the PCR tests, do have a lot of false positives, and the symptoms are consistent with a lot of other colds, that you do want to make sure that you have presence of antibodies in your serum, not just rely on the fact that you had a positive test within the last 18 months.
Wow. And some of what you just said is the first time I have ever heard that. And also, I guess what I heard you say, breaking it down into non-doctor language here, is it doesn't necessarily benefit you greatly to stack the antibodies, in a sense, by having the vaccine after your natural antibodies are already in place from a prior infection.
What you got to understand is this vaccine specifically only gives you an antibody to a very narrow protein on the surface of the cell. Classically, if you've been exposed to SARS-CoV-2 and actually had the infection, you have antibodies to all the surface proteins, you know, ORF1, ORF4, the nucleoprotein, the spike protein, the subunit 1, the RBD. I mean, so again, it's like instead of having one lock, you have 15. And so it's always been that way, even in the way that we've vaccinated in the past. What we usually do is we take away the worst part of a virus. It's called inactivating it. We replicate that virus in some type of medium and then put it in your arm or some other soft tissue area and have your body passively exposed to the inactivated virus. And it's exposed to the whole virus. You make antibodies to all of the viral proteins except the one that pulled off to inactivate it. So again, and that's why this is different. The spike protein itself is just one very narrow subunit of one protein on the SARS-CoV-2 virus.
That is fascinating. Well, Doc, we got about 1 minute left, so let me just ask you this. I mean, vaccine mandates, socially speaking, knowing that many people already have the natural antibodies, do you have an opinion on the idea of a broad-ranging vaccine mandate?
Yeah, you know, the first thing I would say about a vaccine mandate is the fact that they are not giving, credit for prior immunity should make you question who's making these mandates, because that doesn't follow basic medical science in the past.
Yeah,
we have always given pretty good deference to prior immunity.
Well,
so,
Dr.
beyond that,
yeah,
it's really, I think, in a sense, we can use it from the left side of the ring. My body, my choice, in the sense that it should be a discussion you have with your physician and have them make, help you make the decision.
Well, Dr. Vaughn, we are out of time, but this has been hugely informative.
Be making for you.
I hope that you would be willing to come back on the show again and keep talking to our audience, because you've been hugely informative today, and we certainly appreciate your time. That's Dr.
Right,
Jordan Vaughn
so.
From MedHelp Clinics in Birmingham. Folks, we'll be right back with more on Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right, and breaking news right when we come back on UA on a major hospital decision. We'll be right back.
This is News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WV.